the motivation of the book was to take the academia and pull it down to the level of leaders who do the grunt work of ministry all the time.
You are listening to Our Urban Voices with Dr. Alphonse Javet, a podcast that presents Christian narratives through diverse voices that impact urban ministry. Here is your host.
Hello and welcome back to Our Urban Voices. I'm your host, Dr. Alphonse Javet. Today, we are joined by Dr. Jeffrey Dudley Sr., the founding and senior pastor of New Life in Christ Church in O'Fallon, Illinois. Originally from Goldsboro, North Carolina, Dr. Dudley began ministry at the age of 13, is a retired Air Force chaplain and lieutenant colonel, and also the CEO of iLead Enterprises, a leadership development platform for staff and workforce development. Thanks for joining us today, Dr. Dudley. How are you?
I'm doing very well, Dr. Javet. I am so thankful and grateful that you permitted me to be a part of your podcast and to speak into the lives of your listeners. It's an honor. Thank you for the invitation. Glad to be here.
I'm so happy that you are here. So before we get started, please tell us very briefly about your family. And here's my logic behind that. Every guest that comes to our podcast, I want them to connect with you as a person first so that they can hear your professional life and your professional ministry, and they can connect that with your personal story. So let's start with your personal life. You don't need to go in detail. Just give us enough so we can connect with you.
Just enough. Okay. Well, how about this? You already said that I'm from Goldsboro, North Carolina. That's God's country there. There's no question about that. Everybody says that about their hometown, I'm sure. I'm married 43 years. I have two grown children and a son-in-law. My daughter is the eldest, and both my children are in ministry, full-time ministry. Both are seminary graduates, of which I am extremely proud of. And they are in ministry as we speak. And no grandchildren yet.
They're coming.
And so pray. And so I think I already mentioned 43 years married. And, you know, half of that time of those 43 years was in the military, and the other half has been in civilian ministry. I now do the best job in all the world as a senior pastor of New Life, which follows the best job in all the world of being a chaplain, an Air Force chaplain. Now, I want to just mention this one thing. You said you want to know something about me, you know, and then we can move into it. My favorite ice cream is butter pecan ice cream. How about that?
That's wonderful. I'm going to try that because I always get this Jamocha ice cream. Have you ever tried Jamocha? It's from, Dunkin' Donut have their own ice cream shop.
Yeah.
So that's where I get it. It's really good. But I'm going to try that one.
Yeah.
From the brief bio, you have done many things, all to a high level. And here's my question.
Okay.
What was the motivation behind that? Or rather, was that a motivation for writing your book, Leading Through Storms, Successfully Navigating Ministry While Maintaining Your Mental Health?
Let me make sure I understand the question. Are you asking me?
What was the motivation? So your bio starts with, as I understand, your early life is like 13. You are only 13.
Oh, yeah.
And up until the age of 13, you don't have, unless there's something drastic happen, there are not many experiences. And then you're launching into this amazing ministry and career and life. So I'm just wondering, what was the motivation behind? And if that motivation, whatever that was, is the motivation behind writing this book?
The motivation of ministry, of course, is to call upon my life. And the various things from the 6 earned degrees to 2 terminal degrees to serving in the military, to having ministered all over the world via the military and starting and being a church planter. The motivation, of course, is the call. The motivation of the book, the motivation of the book was to speak to take the academia and pull it down to the level of leaders who do the grunt work of ministry all the time. We tend to so focus on the platform, those who have large platforms and those who have huge ministries, and we gook and gawk at that, and it's great, it's fine. But where ministry actually takes place, where I've seen it from all of the places I've been, is really at that 50, 100 membership church, and those leaders who are doing everything they can, who've not been privileged or blessed as you and I to have gone to seminary, to sit in a classroom or online. They're doing their level best. So the motivation of the book was to speak to them, to take that lofty information and bring it to their level and say, this is, you can do this, and here are some tools and some handles by which you can do it.
Yeah, amazing. And the title of your book is, again, for the audience, Leading Through Storms, Successfully Navigating Ministry While Maintaining Your Mental Health. So there are many books on leadership on the shelves. And even lately, when I was at Barnes and Nobles, and I was amazed. It was after a very long time, I went to a physical bookstore, and still I found many books on leadership. What is unique in your approach as you look at your book? What is unique about that
I'd
approach?
let you look through the lens of my life.
Sure.
I think that's the uniqueness of it. I ask you, I ask the reader, hey reader, thank you for opening this book. Join me on this journey that you may be able to learn leadership through the lens of my life, both the pluses, the minuses, the goods, the bads, and the transparency. Most of the books, and they're all good books, as I'm sure you would agree, on leadership that are on the shelves, they're awesome, they're wonderful, but few ask you to look at leadership through the lens of someone's life. I call it praxis.
And interestingly, I was thinking about that. I'm trying to relate that to our pulpit ministry the same way. When you think about a pastor, there are different type of pastors who are just pulpit driven pastors, but they don't have a personal story. They will do a good exposition of the text, but there's no personal connection. Your life is not reflected through the application or illustration where your congregation is connecting with you. Yes, they will get and connect with the word. They will learn. They will get a lot of head knowledge. But when it comes to the practice and how it is applied in a personal life, that's where the story of oneself comes in. And as a matter of fact, my terminal degree, first one, was in leadership. And there is the same idea. You see a lot of good books. You read tons of books. And almost all of those books talk about leadership, what it is and how it's done. They give you great examples too, but of companies. But it's almost like you are looking at those example from distance. But the difference I'm hearing from you is you're walking with them. You're telling them, come with me, look at me, what I'm doing. And the objective, hopefully, is that watch what I did, what I'm doing, and then try in your own life. Am I getting it right?
You knocked the ball out of the park.
No, thank you, brother. All right.
I mean,
So,
really, that's exactly the whole deal. Because as you've said, the theories are great.
yes, that's what I mean.
They are. I'm not throwing shade on any of that.
Sure.
But I think, and what I had in my mind when writing this book, the pastor of the storefront, who will never darken the doors of a seminary. The pastor who started the church, with his family and some other believers.
Yeah.
Those pastors, from small to medium to even large, look at how I messed up some stuff,
That's right.
and look at how the mission went forward with the faithfulness of God.
Yeah, man.
That's the piece, that the motivator, and
Yeah.
it remains that. It remains that to be in my life, to show that in the book and in my life.
So another thing I noticed in your book is the mental health piece, and especially you often when we're reading books on leadership, you don't see that. It's more of just gives you, okay, fix this thing. Are you is a managerial, how you can take that, how you need to be exact, but a lot of those kind of again theories. But you brought this another idea of mental health there. So mental health is a topic that sometimes and still holds a stigma or shame, and especially when it comes to the church culture. Do you see that changing in our society and cult and church culture to one where leader can say, I need some help, or I am not okay right now? What is your take on that? Do you see that changing?
I see it changing, and I thought, Dr. Javid, a lot about how transparent I was going to be. I thought about, I could probably, and for the listeners, Dr. Javid is referring to the mental health aspects, which crystallize in suicide ideation. And I thought about that the whole aspect of our emotions, the emotive, and I thought about how transparent do I want to be? How vulnerable do I want to be? Or can I find I'm skilled enough of a writer, I could have said some things and never said that,
Right.
but still made the points. But I said, what's the let's put the shame down. And let's pick up being a leader. And being a leader is that. And that is, we are emotional beings. We have an emotional side of us. And to act as if we lead absent of that is not true, authentic leadership.
And I think my problem often that I see as a pastor, especially as a pastor, because as a teacher or professor, the level of openness is different. I think in my case, my students are pastors. I do demon. I teach demon courses, and it's very different. But still, I get the opportunity to speak into their lives. But when come to church life, I think that's where I am more interested. I think that's where everybody looks at you because you're supposed to be a pastor. You're supposed to be close to God. You're supposed to be, you're supposed to be enriched with the Bible and the Word of God. So you should not be facing any problem. And then there comes the issue that, as you said, it's but that's not authentic because
No.
there is your emotional side. You're still human. You have family. Your family has crisis. You have, I think, when it comes to church ministry, that's more demanding and more stressful than when you look at any other job. Any other job, you're done. Or you go to your work, you get your checklist done, you're done. But when it comes to church, you're dealing with people, all kinds of people with all kinds of problem, and it's 24/7. And I think that's where your idea of vulnerability, I was taking notes down. That idea is so critical. How vulnerable the amount of vulnerability is okay. That becomes my issue. Like, okay, how much you need to be open, how much you need to be exposed, so it doesn't become like, oh, my pastor is just like, it doesn't even apply the word that he is preaching. Versus, no, I'm also human. I have these needs. I think that's the struggle I see when I talk to pastors that are unable to share with the congregation. That's their main struggle, how much needs to be said and
And I
why.
think the way you do that, and the way you don't cross those lines and blur those lines and not bleed on the people. And I mentioned this in my book, that you don't bleed on the people. One of my professors used to always say, the homiletics professor would say, don't bleed on the people. And that is, you preach series. You are very judicious about bringing your own personal story into the text and into the sermon moment. You have a counselor in which you can talk out these things. You don't need to have deferred anger and bring these pieces to the pulpit every Sunday. You have to be judicious with that. Now, the ministry of the pastoral ministry is one thing. The academic ministry is another thing. And I felt free to share this in this book because I was looking at this through the lens of the academia and the academy. Now, I was fully aware that when I write this book that my congregation would read the book. I had hoped they would. And as a result of that, I pulled the leaders in, the key leaders in before the book was published. And I said, hey, this is what's coming. This is what's coming. This is how I got here. You can clearly see I didn't stay here. And I need you to then be aware of this. That's how I managed it.
That's strong. That's courageous too, and wise. So there are many storms that we can go through: betrayal, financial setbacks, anxiety, depression, work, and so many other things that contribute to our mental load. How can one recognize that he or she is getting to the breaking point?
Know thyself. Know thyself. And I think that requires you. I'm currently working on being a board certified coach. And so I'm reading through some things, and it was talking about how leaders tend not to be reflective. This particular article I was reading, I was just reading it last night, in fact. And I thought, wow, I've never thought of it, leaders not being self-reflective. I thought leaders are extremely self-reflective. But this particular article was saying not so. But I think one needs to be self-reflective. I think one needs to have a high IQ of oneself. Because then you can know your breaking points. You can know your breaking points.
So at my church, an elder is working toward a master's in pastoral counseling. And he said that many of his classes include a section on self-care. In your experience and in your writing, what practical steps can leaders, especially as you said that you're thinking about storefront church pastor who did not go to seminary, did not get those tools that helps them to assess their mental health and all the other things, self-care and all, they never heard that. In your view, what practical steps can leaders take to cultivate, number one, self-awareness, and number two, emotional reliance, and number three, self-care?
Your EQ, your emotional quotient, and all of these things, as you said, they are great academy language, but not even the storefront. But the average pastor may not be aware of that. I would use the language of rhythm.
Rhythm.
What is the rhythms of your life? And know, and I would add to that, what are the seasons to your life? Most of us have a good sense of our own development with respect from teenage, adolescence to adult to young adult to middle age and so on and so forth. All of those junctures in life carry with them certain aspects of life, certain rhythms, certain rhythms. I would bring that to ministry. How do I take care of myself? That was your question. How do I do that? I do that by knowing my rhythms. What are your rhythms? And then something as small as taking time off and keeping it. You mentioned it earlier. I don't know whether it was before we started the broadcast or during, but you mentioned the fact that our lives are 24/7.
Right.
And I came from, I'm a boomer, right? But I learned from my Gen X, and I learned from my millennial children, Dad, turn off.
Right.
Turn off. Stop talking about ministry. We're home, you know, they're all adults. We're all watching the football or whatever we're doing. And they're like, you know, turn it off. And I started listening to them because for me, I mean, turn off what? What are you talking about? I mean, we're talking ministry. Isn't this what we do 24/7? I mean, you know, but they are able to turn it off. And they are able to say, no, my daughter who's on staff, she's like, we're not talking about ministry today. We're off today. And she can give me the straightest look. And I had to learn. And so I would say to the elder and to others who are listening, mm-hmm. I would say, check out these younger generations as to how they manage and get their rhythms. Because as a boomer, I had no sense of that.
Yeah. And I think that's a tough thing because you're right. Younger generation or people who are now in seminaries, that's why this elder is hearing about this a lot, self-care.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you had gone to seminary 20 years ago, 30 years ago, that's not the case. You don't talk about those things. You have very straightforward courses, and you take those courses. And
Absolutely.
Even when you talk about older brothers who've been in ministry, to them, this like, what are you talking about? To them, still, it doesn't make sense.
What do you mean?
Yeah, right. But at the same time, I think that is causing a lot of damage in pastoral community, has affected the community. We have seen the fallout of amazing pastors who got into trouble because when you are emotionally, you know, dried and you have given everything to work, but when you fall, nobody's there to catch you. And then
there to catch you. And then on top of that, part of that fall had to do with the fact you had poured out and you were looking for something or someone to pour in.
Yeah.
And you went to the wrong places to do that. And you didn't even recognize that.
Very good.
I remember my coach, my executive coach, he mentioned this and it was so good. He was like, "You visionaries always have to have something that they are going after."
That's right. Yeah.
And to include, if they don't have something they're going after, they will find something or somebody to go
there
after.
There you go. Yeah, you're right. Absolutely right.
It's just a part of who they are. It's you know, yeah. it's the hunt in us. Let me go out and kill the animal and bring them back to the village.
You're right. It's the drive, right? They got the drive. And now if it's not the next project, if not the next goal, then it's going to go somewhere else. Here's my question.
Okay.
How can the church leadership help in that regard? What can they do? How can the congregation help their pastors to have that, you know, awareness, cultivate that self-awareness, emotional resilience, and self-care?
Demand that they take time. Demand, put in there for those churches who have the budget, put in their budget coach, put in their budget a therapist, put in their budget, you will go on vacation. You will do that. I recently, now in 40 some years of ministry, right? Never been on sabbatical. Never been on sabbatical. And guess what, Dr. Javid? I didn't even know it was in my contract. Now, wow. I planted the church, right? And I was looking, and so we applied to get this grant for me to go. This foundation that gives grants to pastors to go on sabbaticals. And we applied, right? I want to say it's the Lilly Foundation. And we applied, and the business manager of the church says, she said, Bishop, this has been in your package all along. I said, what? She said, you could have gone on a sabbatical. I didn't even pay it any attention. I was so hard at doing what I was doing. Yeah. I would say to church leaders, demand that.
Yeah.
And then remind it was there, but none of the board and none of the senior elders came and says, sabbatical, why? So I applied, and in 40 some years, I've never been on a sabbatical. I'm looking forward. I hope we get the grant because I'm looking forward to going on a sabbatical.
That's amazing. Yeah. Well, that's another thing. Today in seminaries, that's one of the things. Almost all organization, if you look at ECFA, the Evangelical Council on Accreditation, Financial Accreditation, they put this long list of things. And one of that is when they are taking new members in, that's one of the things. Their staff takes a sabbatical. Their pastors take a sabbatical. And I think seminaries are focusing on that. Churches, especially younger pastors, they are very clear on that because they have seen the damage it does to the individual and what it does to the family. Because it cost them. As a matter of fact, when I took my current job, that was one of the conversation I had with the elders. I said, well, by the time I complete my 6 years, I want to have a sabbatical where I can take time. Because I saw the current average is 3 to 6 years. That's the people, 3 years, people leave, pastors, burn out, whatever, or 6 years, so 3 to 6 years. Mm-hmm. So the idea that is around now is before you get to that point, you need to take a break, rest, reconnect with your family. And that's not your time. This is interesting. There are guidelines. This is not your time to write a book.
Right.
This is not
exactly.
Your time to plan for the next series or project. This is your time to do nothing. Just enjoy your life and your family. Go for a hike or do something. And I was like, how I can't do that. I just like you, you said 13, my work life started, not ministry, work life started at the age of 14. I'm from Pakistan. My dad is a pastor too. So that's how my life started. And I looked back and I was like, wow, but I don't know how not to work. That's my struggle. how to stop my brain from thinking. So it's a tough one. So Leading Through the Storm is not only a book on leadership, but also a personal look into your life and testimony. Divided in four major sections, before the storm, weather alert, in the storm, and after the storm. How have your experiences played out in the storms? And to continue the analogy, help you weather the storms?
The before the storm, I think, provided me the energy to get through in the storm. And while when I was trying to saw the forecast of it all, I was learning and feeling my way through. And in the storm, and for those who have not read the book, I certainly hope that you would read the book. One of the storms, there were many storms, not just one. One of the storms is when we were midway in construction and the bank pulled out and therefore left a half constructed sanctuary. How do you grow a church when someone drives up on the campus and half of the sanctuary is not done? And now we are trying to get financing and all of that. How do you grow a church without asking for money? Or when you ask that people don't look like that's all you're doing. How do you do that? The Lord was faithful with us. We weathered those things. Some of the storms were staff saying, okay, we're going to start our own church. And those pieces. Now, working through those things, there was the energy before. There was the discernment in the weathering, and there was the faithfulness of God in the middle. And then there was, of course, coming out on the other side, the silver lining, the breakthrough, the completion of construction, those pieces. And I think when you look at those pieces, I put it, looked at it through the lens of weather, but it is all through, also through the seasons of life. We all have seasons. We are cyclical beings, as we know. I mean, we are in a cyclical world. We live in a solar system. And therefore, if you look at that, and even when we look at the text, in Galatians, when he talks about now help those who have helped you, Paul talking. We are in that kind of a thing. And so I think that's what helped me. And I think that's what will help others when they understand that what we say on the street is what goes around comes around. Yeah.
What do you want the next generation of pastors to understand that you wish you knew
If I
earlier in
had
your
a
career?
conversation with myself when I started, that's a great question. Keep the energy, but know that it may not work out the way you think. My mind goes back. Here's the thing. My mind goes back to here I am, gave my life to Christ at 12, started preaching at 13, come from a Pentecostal holiness background, you know, and me and my buddy, my bestie, who's best man of my wedding, we would go to the denomination and, oh, they should do this. We got all the answers, you know. If we were in charge, this is what we would do. Keep that energy, keep that idealism, but understand that it is going to bump up against reality. That's what I would say. If I could have a conversation with that guy, I that's what I would tell him.
Everything was timed, right? Everything is timed by not man, by God. And I think those kind of things, and I'm thinking about you talking about energy, because what we want to do is get things done, right? Let's get this done. But then there's a God's timing problem. It's a good problem. Because he sees everything in advance, and he sees even currently, he knows how it's going to turn out. And sometimes that's where the problem, especially with the younger generation I'm seeing, even my own children, they are extremely impatient. They want right now, right here. Why not? And there are so many questions. And like, can you just not? I'm literally driving. You're distracting me. It can cause us an accident. Can't you just trust? Sometimes you don't even have the time to explain. And it's something they gotta trust. And I think younger generation is dealing with that more than you or I did growing up. And I think that's where this your advice is really good. Don't let the energy go, but slow down. And just know that there's going to be bumps. Slow down. Don't need to drop your energy, but you can still get this done. So as we close out, is there anything else you would like to add to this conversation?
Well, I would love for everyone, not just ministry leaders, because I do think the book speaks to everyone, leading through storms, because life has storms, life's and successfully navigating ministry while maintaining your mental health. All of us deal with mental health kinds of exasperations and those pieces. So love for everyone to get it, and they can go on, and I'm sure you may have this on all platforms. It's Bishop Dudley PhD on all of the platforms. Bishop Dudley PhD. They can do that and check us out. If they're ever in the St. Louis metropolitan area, please come and see us, New Life Church. We'd love to have you. And the thing that I want to say, and the final thing I'd love to say is, don't lead like you're led, lead better.
Very good. That's a beautiful advice. If listeners want to get in touch with you or find your book, what are the easiest ways?
Amazon, they can
Okay.
go on Amazon, or they can go on IVP and get that InterVarsity Press. But go on Amazon. I always tell everybody, go on Amazon, read the book, and
Review.
a review. But if you're not going to give me 5 stars, don't bother.
Let's be clear about that,
Yeah, let me
right?
be clear. If you're not going to give me 5 stars, don't bother.
Great. Our listeners can find all that in the episode's description or on our podcast website. And for the last thing, because we talk about heavy topics, we're talking about mental health, we are talking about pastors who probably can't afford or probably never heard about sabbatical, but they're still laboring hard. And many pastors are going through right now, currently through those storms. And maybe this podcast is helpful for that pastor too. But because we talk about heavy topics, I would like to ask you to tell us a joke to lighten the mood. I know you are a serious man. You are, all these credentials show me that very serious stuff, but we are all human. So I want to hear a joke.
We are all human, but I thought about that, and thank you for giving me a heads up. But I said, my God, I don't even have a dad's joke. I mean, wow. The next book and the next interview, I'll have one, okay?
All right, that's fine. But isn't that amazing though? Sometimes I sit here and I talk to, sometimes actually, once I had Alliance's president and I asked him the same thing. So it's interesting when you speak to, folks like you, men like you who've been in the industry and God has done so many things through them. Sometimes I find it so ridiculous to even ask them, can you tell me a joke? But because just such a serious life they have. But
Yes,
then sometimes they will just blow your mind when they tell you a joke and it's hilarious. I was like, man, this is amazing. But I totally understand. But thank you so much again for being here.
thank you for
And
having me.
oh, absolutely. And thank you so much for being on the show again. That was Dr. Jeffrey Durley. And thank you to all our listeners. We truly could not do this without you. If you learned something, have a topic suggestion, or would like to leave us feedback, drop us a note at oururbanvoices.com. Be sure to subscribe to the show and leave an honest review wherever you listen to your podcasts.
You've been listening to Our Urban Voices with Dr. Alphonse Javed, which presents Christian narratives through diverse voices that impact urban ministry.